The biggest sports stories of the week.
I think that is the attitude you should have. But if the first thing you bring up when you look at the standings is Craig Counsell, then he has real estate in your head.
I don't think you can even argue.
Oh, no argument.
The Green Bay Packers, the way it ended,
but like I just said it, like they were 7-8 last year against everyone besides the Bears, right?
Unique and compelling analysis and opinions when it comes to your favorite teams.
As much as they want, because both teams are good and that game to be
Kyle, you're not feeling this.
Jason knows I'm not feeling
Kyle
it.
Kyle and I have already had this argument. Yeah. You hate that I feel.
What else was on the WB back then? What else did I miss?
You probably saw the Wayans brothers, right?
Yeah.
The Jamie Foxx show. Come on now, Craig. You know the Jamie Foxx show?
No.
You know,
this is Sunday Karma, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studios at The Avenue. Here's GKB founder and CEO, Craig Karmazin.
Hey, it's been a while.
Hey, you. How are you?
What's going on, man? It's a tough week.
Oh, who you telling?
Tough week for the Milwaukee Brewers. Man. We compared this team a bunch this year to last year's Packers team. You know, we said that it was a year early or an unexpected run or expected to finish last in the division, and here they are. Leading the division. And the Brewers ended up being the most dominant division leader throughout the year. I mean, the Phillies and Dodgers also in the National League dominated their divisions. But, I mean, the Brewers led wire to wire. The Brewers then lost Christian Yelich, right? And we didn't know that how that was going to impact them. A team that was going to be already without a few of their best arms, you know, through most of the year. It was a team that then saw Jackson Churio become, I think, what we were hoping Jackson Churio would have been next year or the year after, which is kind of what I think we saw from Jordan Love, right? The way Jordan Love played the last 8-9 weeks of the season is how Jackson Churio played from June through October. Not just June through September, June through October in terms of what he ended up doing. And then the Brewers make it to the postseason. And as you get into the postseason, there was game one that felt very much to the fans in the building. And I was disappointed in the fans in the building. Were you at game one, Kyle?
I was not. I was there in spirit while watching on television.
So game one, I felt like was very disappointing to see the fans' reaction. The Brewers had just a really fluke 5-run inning that they give up, you know, that ends up losing the game. I mean, they came out on fire. First 3-4 guys get hits. Brewers are up 2-0. They go down 3-2, but they get back up 4-3. They end up total fluke. They don't run the play where the pitcher covers first base well, right?
I mean, it happened the next game, too.
Yeah, well, that was the throw, right, the error on the pitcher there. But, I mean, so they give up 5 runs. The crowd, like, kind of leaves. And this had been a 4 o'clock start. So crowd disappointed, and it felt like, here we go again. Brewers postseason. We're in it every year, but we can't do anything once we're in it, right? And it's been, you know, it's been a few years now since the Brewers have advanced in a postseason. So I understand.
So almost a decade.
No.
2018. That's more than 5 years, Craig.
It's not almost a decade.
Your daughter was in elementary school. Now she's dang near an adult.
So the Brewers lose game one. Game two. Probably of all the games in the series, had the most uncomfortable flow for the Brewers because game one felt like it was in hand until that 5-run inning. Game two, pretty uncomfortable flow. Brewers down 3-1, battle back to 3-2. They had been down 1-0, actually, in the top of the first inning when Churio hits the home run. Churio hits his second game-tying home run of the game. Not of the series, not of the season, not of the game. In the bottom of the eighth inning, after, you know, Terang had, you know, gotten another extra base hit, which Bryce Terang was excellent throughout this series. Churio homers, 3-3. And what could be more like the majority of this Brewers season, where everything just seemed to work out? This manager managed extremely well throughout this season. Right? We're going to stick with that right now. Garrett Mitchell, who had come in as a pinch runner and got caught stealing. Could there be a worse scenario? You bring in a guy to pinch run and he gets caught stealing, hits the two-run home run in the bottom of the eighth, and the Brewers end up winning because Devin Williams, smooth as silk, 10 pitches. 10 pitches for Devin Williams. 8 of them strikes. 10 pitches, 8 of them strikes for Devin Williams. Bottom of the order, he gets through 7, 8, 9. Now, through two games, what was the single biggest criticism you had heard of the Brewers through two games, tied at 1?
Not scoring enough runs. I have no idea. Or the errors. I mean, the criticism was, I guess that was the...
Through two games, the biggest criticism was that Pat Murphy had pulled Freddie too early in game one.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Yeah. Tobias Myers on game 3.
But I'm saying that was the knock, right? Yeah. That he had pulled Freddie too early in game 1.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just stick with this. So we go to game 3. Game 3, tension. No runs. By the way, only one guy on the Mets with a hit through the first 8 innings of the game.
2 hits from Francisco Lindor. Yeah. That's it.
The only guy who had gotten a hit. And we're talking about tension. We're talking about no score. We're scoreless through God Bless America and roll out the barrel, right? We're tied at 0, bottom of the 7th. Brewers have gotten scoreless innings from 2 relievers after Myers gives the outing of his life, right? That 5-inning, 5-strikeout, 2-hit start for Myers. You know, best and most meaningful outing of his career at this point. So Brewers then light up American Family Field. Back-to-back home runs from, I don't want to call it the unlikeliest guys on the roster.
Come on, Craig. Jake Bowers.
You're saying...
He unlikely right. To take the lead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the guy didn't hit 200 this year. He did have double-digit home runs.
But unlikely guy right. In that moment. And then a guy who only had 2 home runs
right. The
whole year.
Sal Frelick, 2 home runs the whole year. He goes yard. Brewers up 2-0. And then, all of a sudden, coming in for the 8th inning, Freddie Peralta. Oh, okay. Maybe Pat Murphy's terrible call in game 1 is going to work out.
Oh, wow. You called it terrible. So you were against pulling Freddie.
I didn't think it was, but I'm saying fans who were saying that.
Okay.
Maybe his terrible call is going to work out. Or those same fans were there saying, oh, you can't bring Freddie in. He doesn't know how to pitch in relief. He's not a relief pitcher.
They should have been saying, I see what Pat was doing.
Right. So Freddie handles the bottom of the order really easily, right? Doesn't strike anyone out, but gets through that really easily. So Brewers then, again, unfortunately, can't add to, you know, that 2-0 lead. You know, bottom of the 8th. You know, Adames strikeout, Sanchez grounds out, Bauer strikes out, Edwin Diaz just kind of plows through. Now, you really look at where they had the opportunity, bottom of the 7th, Terang walked. Churio flies out. Perkins walks after the two home runs. So you did have two guys on for Contreras, who strikes out bottom of the seventh. Contreras had a rough series.
Bad knee. Yeah. Very bad knee.
Yeah, definitely fighting through it, and not a great series for him. So you go to the ninth, and you bring in Devin Williams. So now, of course, in retrospect, there's those people who are going to be like, Freddie looked so good. You got to pitch Freddie two innings.
Can I ask you, were you thinking all we got to do is get this 2-0 lead to Devin Williams and we're going on to the next round?
Oh, once it was a two-run lead, I felt so good about it.
I said we just got to get to Freddie. Devin. Got to get to Devin. And seeing the way that everybody pitched, the intensity. Like when the pitchers came on, the relief pitchers came on, and they legitimately, when they got out the innings and they're like pumping their chest, they're screaming, they're yelling, you feel the moment. You feel exactly how they basically know this is a big moment for this team to get through this. The confidence was there, Craig. I said, just get us to Devin.
And everything that Pat Murphy did this season, this series, I don't want to hear that this had anything to do with Pat Murphy. The equation worked. The process worked. The roster worked. Everything worked. Because you look at what was going on then. You get there with a two-run lead. What does that mean, Kyle? I'm pulling it up. That meant it was... You were at 90.6%. 90.6, actually, you were at 93.3%. You were at 93.3% before the Lindor walk. By the way, you were still at 90.6% after the Vientos strikeout. But that walk was terrible. Now, I know the argument is Lindor almost swung on the 3-2 pitch, right? He barely checked his swing, but in that spot, a home run is as bad as a walk to Lindor, right? I mean, his run can't hurt you. Like, the idea of if he scores or whatever, it's the same. You can't let him on base. And again, you don't want to give him a home run, obviously. You don't want to give up anything.
He let him on base.
What?
Devin just had an off night. I don't think Devin's intention was
you
think he was pitching around Francisco Lindor? He didn't want to give him any. I mean, Francisco had been the best hitter.
He's Francisco Lindor. He had the two hits. Yeah. I think, to me, that was the thing. Everyone's talking about the tipping pitches. Everyone's talking about all these different things. To me, it's that leadoff walk. At least, you know, at least be in the strike zone. At least, you know, make him get on base. I mean, he could hit a hard ball that could be an out, right? I mean, how many times do we see that? We see that constantly in baseball. You put the tying run on base, it opens up so many things. You get the Vanto strikeout, Nemo gets the walk, or gets the hit, and then Alonso hits the opposite field home run. And then I think Bob Uecker nailed it. I mean, all I was thinking in that bottom of the inning is, if we can just somehow... And by the way, Devin Williams then gives up a lot more, right?
I mean, he gave up another run.
It didn't end with the home run. It was...
Sterling Marte, I think, got a hit to send somebody home. It was sad, Craig. It really was. It sucks. I don't know about you. I mean, you're a Brewer fan as well. And, you know, the dejectedness I felt when that happened and when the game ended, How do you blame Brewers fans for feeling the way they felt after game one, Craig? I mean, this is a story that we continue to see.
I understand after game one, but not during game one. That's my knock. My only knock on Brewers fans was, I mean, you can't all leave the game in the seventh inning at 6:30 at night to beat the traffic.
Stop it. Don't. And
that was a terrible job by Brewers fans.
No, I agree.
Brewers fans have had a lot of tough defeats, but that's what postseason baseball is about. Brewers fans bounced back really well as a fan base in games two and three. And I was, and by the way, I'm not going to knock for the empty seats that were there. It was quick turnaround. Major League Baseball is a terrible job by Major League Baseball. Not
empty seats. What game? What?
Every game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean,
game three,
the game times weren't set till 5 minutes before. Like, they didn't have they didn't say if game three, you didn't know if it was going to be a 2 o'clock game or a night game until when the Padres game ended at 10 o'clock at night the night before.
Yeah, they probably should do a better job.
So people, how are people gonna figure out their lives? People have work, people have kids, people have all sorts of things. So a good job by the Brewers fans filling up the stadium the way they did and supporting the team the way they did in games two and games three without a lot of
lead up
prep
time,
there. Yeah. So no knock on a good job by the Brewers fans there. Game one, I didn't like how they gave up as quickly as they did. But going into that bottom of the ninth, even down 4-2, it was like Jackson Churio has something so special going on that if he comes to the plate as the tying run, he's either going to get walked, keep the inning going, or could he actually tie this game?
So So
after Ortiz strikes out with a runner on first, and I was almost happy that he struck out. So I was like, all right, thank God. No double play there. I was worried about the double play. Now we got Terang up. Terang can't hit into a double play because he runs so fast. He's not a double play guy. So now we're good. So either Terang's gonna get a hit, a walk, a something. But no matter what, Jackson's coming up as the tying run here in the bottom of the ninth. And that's what Euchre, I think, just nailed. It's just like the odds and the possibility, like the only way that could have happened was like that exact ball hit that hard. I mean, just the worst way to end, right? Like if you could have just gotten Jackson up. And the Brewers lose 2-1. They lose game 3, 4-2. In just what was a fantastic, fantastic 2024 Milwaukee Brewers season. A season that was unexpected. Pat Murphy did a great job. Matt Arnold did a fantastic, fantastic job. And these players were just great. I mean, it didn't feel like they were so, like, fluky this year. Like, who are the guys who you're like, oh, there's no way he could ever play like this again. This, you never saw this coming. This was
Tobias Myers
impossible.
Is one of them.
Yeah.
Colin Ray, another one.
But
I mean,
but there were other guys, like, you know what I mean? Like, but there's a ton of guys, like, I mean, Sal Frelick, I don't think he had, like, the year I would have expected him to have.
He definitely didn't. I see what you're saying when it comes to
I'm saying this was not a fluke. This wasn't like a, oh, my God, everyone had the most amazing seasons. I think it was, wow, this team is just really well built. Because, I mean, the bullpen was fantastic all year, right?
Which, shout out to Matt Arnold and shout out to David Stearns, who is with the Mets now, for basically creating a system of where they're looking for hard throwing arms. And, like, this is what they've been able to develop and what they've been able to look for, which has benefited us in our bullpen for the past couple years.
But Tobias Harris and Freddie Peralta were
Tobias Harris.
Tobias Myers.
Are you drafted by the Bucks?
I'm getting in NBA mode already. Tobias Myers and Freddie Peralta were, in terms of wins over replacement, we're 2.7 and 2.6 to lead the pitching staff.
No, I feel great.
Which is great. But I'm saying it's not like anyone was like, oh my God, they had an MVP season that, you know, is not going to be replicated. I mean, Willy Adames was fantastic throughout this year. Willy Adames.
Every game. So, I mean, that's what happens when you have, I mean, and you're a really good player.
Willy Adames was clutch. He was Mr. 3-run home run. Contreras was great. Terang didn't end up hitting that well this year, but
did he come down? I thought Terang ended up in the 270s. Did he not? Because he was tearing it up.
254.
So he
only a 316 on base percentage. Only a 685 OPS.
He came down.
665 OPS, but still a 4.6 wins over replacement because he above replacement because he is so good defensively. He stole 50 bases. That stuff's not going away. And that's the thing about this team, right? Like, I don't want to say that the arrow is pointing up on the Brewers because I think that would be an unfair expectation.
Oh, malarkey, baloney. It should be the expectation.
No.
The arrow should be pointing up. How do you say that, Craig?
Because this team won 93 games this year. So there's no way I'm going to predict that this team's going to win more than that next year.
Well, this should be who they are.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
This should be who they are.
Exactly.
But they're going to get
better. The beauty of how this team is built is this year was not a fluke. As a Brewers fan, you can feel so confident that the Brewers will end up probably making more of a run at Willy Adames than we think. and maybe end up not getting him. But whatever the case ends up being, I think you have a really, really good feel going into next year that this team has the exact opportunity to be right back where they were this year. And we saw it. Like, even the Astros, who never lose in the playoffs, they lost in the playoffs this year. I mean, once you get into these little two-game, three-game series, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. And obviously, it didn't go the way the Brewers wanted. But this team's arrow is not going down from 93 wins. This team's arrow, to me, is that they are built to be exactly what they were this year. And I don't think they were even built to be it this year, which is what, again, the comparison to the Packers, right? They were a year ahead. But now, next year, they can really wear those clothes that they did this year, and they should fit, because this team is built for another run. And by the way, it's going to be painful. It's going to be exhausting. It's going to be exhilarating. But that's the beauty and that's the fun of postseason baseball. And there are 26 other major league cities. That was bad math. I don't know exactly how many teams there are and how many make it. But there are a lot of other major league cities that would have loved to have had the Brewers postseasons over the last 7 years. So, again, congratulations to the 2024 Milwaukee Brewers. This was a terrible, terrible way to end a fantastic, fantastic year. We'll talk some football and more Brewers as we continue. It's Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
It's Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com. You're listening to Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com. Because the drinks bring back all the memories of everything
we've been through. 800-990-ESPN. It's 800-990-3776. Talking about the end of the 2024 Brewers season. Steven says, I disagree with you on the Brewers, Craig. Brewers are built for the regular season, not for the playoffs. Pitching, especially starting pitching, is so-so. Yelich injured again. Players, batters with sub 200 averages. That comes from Steven. And I just don't see it. Now, the argument would be that I think we all thought the Mets was the best matchup that you could see. But I don't know. Were the Diamondbacks built for it last year? But they aren't this year, and that's why they didn't make the playoffs. Are the Astros built for it, but now they're not? Like, I think these are like coin tosses. And this year's Brewers got themselves into the position they needed to be. The starting pitching was good enough. Starting pitching is so-so. I kind of agree, right? If you look at over the course of the year. But I mean, the starting pitchers were excellent. The Brewers' bullpen was its strength. So you basically had the starters do what they needed to do to get you to the bullpen. You had one fluke inning in game one, and you have Devin Williams blow it. But this is the equation. This is how a small market, $112 million, whatever the payroll is, team wins. Sure, I don't think you're going to win going away. But, you know, you look at the Tigers and, okay, the Tigers got some great starting pitching. And the Tigers had to catch lightning in a bottle to be in this postseason, right? Like, there's so much that needs to happen right. And to win 90-plus games the way this team did and to have a two-run lead for your closer in an elimination game, to me, means this team was absolutely built the right way to advance in this postseason.
And wait, I'm not going to make... I don't think... You didn't believe that this team... I mean, the performance and the way it was
By the way, are we comparing the Devin Williams inning to Jordan Love's last interception against the 49ers? Or are
no,
we not going there?
No, this was worse than that. This was much worse. This is a established established reliever of the year before in the past. Yeah, a guy and, under a two
and
ER,
this is a
stud.
this is your winning by two. I'm just saying it was like the worst moment of the year for Jordan Love. One of his worst of the year was that, and Devin Williams had two outings like that the whole year, and one of them happens to be in the biggest moment of the year for the Brewers. Jason Wilde joins us as we roll on. It's Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
It's Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com. This is Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com.
Oh, big NFL day and a lot of Brewers talk as Dave chimes in. Steven is off his rockers. Woody, Wade, Gasser, all aces out for the playoffs. Brewers do have a postseason.
Wait, name those three again?
Woody, Wade, Gasser.
Those are aces.
His arms.
Okay. I didn't know 38-year-old.
37, Wade Miley, if you're talking about him.
Okay, 37. I'm sorry.
38 next year. We bring in Jason Wilde, who is also recovering. Jason, did you get to see just a bit outside? A lot of people talking about that movie as I ran around American Family Field the last week.
I did, and I would say two of those three names are either guys who have been an ace or could very well be an ace, right? I mean, I understand Wade Miley's old, but he also won some pretty big ball games in his first tenure with the Brewers, right? So
yeah,
those are three pretty big names, but it's a long list of guys that they were without, and they still were very much in position to advance. So it's a tough deal. Yeah, just a bit outside is great, and you know, Tausch surprised me and asked Robin Yount to come on the show the day of Game 3 when two of my college buddies had an extra ticket. And I wasn't able to go, but I just feel for so many people that care so much about the Brewers' success. And watching, the one thing that got me emotional was seeing Christian Yelich after the game talking with tears welling up in his eyes about Bob Uecker. That was the gut punch emotionally for me.
Yeah, Uke and Jeff Levering both. Super,
yeah, Levering.
Super emotional.
The farewell at the end of the broadcast by Levering was incredibly emotional. I love Jeff. He's such a terrific guy and has become a good friend. And like I said, you hurt for the people that hurt that much.
Yeah. Yeah. Uke was there for Game 3 and everything seemed right in the world until it wasn't. Just before we get into Packers stuff, Aaron Jones out with a hip injury for the rest of the game today. Kind of recurring thing with Aaron Jones' injury, but coming off last week, I mean, this is a Vikings team that is now poised to be 5-0. And you and I talked about this, like, hey, let's not just 100% write off what this Vikings team could be before the year starts, but I guess talk about both of those things, Aaron Jones and what he's done and maybe the kind of decision around him being injury prone and all that. And then how surprising it could be to see the Vikings sitting at 5-0.
Yeah. Aaron Jones looked really good until he left with that hip injury, and he's been good this season. Like, again, he's 3.5 years older than Josh Jacobs. He made a whale of a catch on a really tough ball early in that game.
Yeah.
The other Aaron looking quite miserable throughout the course of this game from what I have seen. But, look, I mean, neither of us would have thought that the Vikings are who they appear to be. But now that they have done this, and we'll see how the rest of this game plays out. It's not over yet. But now that they have done this, I think we have to acknowledge, A, that Kevin O'Connell, much like Matt LaFleur, is a really good coach who's steeped in this offense that makes guys successful, gets guys open, and allows quarterbacks that maybe have not been super terrific like Malik Willis and like Sam Darnold to be successful. So they got a good defense. They got a really good defensive coordinator. And that's a good football team, a better football team than we would have thought as they were kind of going through a transition during the offseason. So I've been impressed with them. I was impressed with them last week. I was impressed with them while I watched the first half this morning. I'm not impressed with the Jets. And it is pretty apparent that you grew up a Jets fan, right?
Yes.
The dysfunction that seems to follow that organization around and the unpleasantness that seems to follow the former Packers quarterback.
Well, that's the thing I still can't. You've never had the chance to talk to him about that specifically, right? Why he would have chosen that one franchise. Like when he talked about how important culture and all those things were to him, that he would choose the Jets of all the teams.
So that I have corresponded with him about. What I have not is what has kind of soured now, right? Like he was all in on Saleh. And I do find myself wondering, like, is it just no one can quite measure up for him?
No, I think it's Saleh like, don't you think it's everyone wants like kind of what they didn't have? And like McCarthy to LaFleur was so different. And then he had LaFleur, but Saleh's more like the fiery defensive alpha. Like, you know, don't you think there's some level of like, oh, I get to play under a guy like this now?
Yeah, I think he liked that idea, but now that he's experienced it, you know, I think the way they handled his offseason absence when he went to Egypt really ticked him off. You saw that exchange with the aborted hug.
Oh, I don't think the hug thing was anything.
It just feels like to me that it's always something these days with him, right? I mean, it just, that's how it feels to
yes.
me. And it's just, you know, maybe the hug thing isn't anything, but he's reached a point now where everything, even things that aren't something, feel like something. And that's never a good place to be. And so, you know, I mean, even something simple today, you know, obviously there was some sort of communication breakdown or, I mean, who knows, maybe it was just the headset shorted out briefly. But the way he's telling Nathaniel Hackett to call the play again, he's spinning his hand, and it gets faster and faster, and he looks more and more irritated as he goes. It's just that it just feels like it's always something. And, you know, maybe they rally and they win this game. I'm still not willing to count the guy out, and especially if they end up adding Davante Adams. But it's just ugly over there. It's just not. It can't be fun to be a Jets fan.
Yeah, as they have another three and out and will be punting it away, or I guess they got it first down on the drive, but deep in their own territory, they'll be punting it away. Down 10 points, and Aaron very, very slow to get up after he's hit on a third down play, grabbing his hamstring as he went down in serious pain. A drive after Sauce Gardner was walked into the back for some sort of further look.
Yeah, he's got a head injury from what I'm seeing on my notification.
Yeah. Oh, Aaron was twisted on top of. He was brought down on top of another Vikings player. So hit hard and then twisted on top of a player in serious pain. He is walking off the field on his own. But
Father Time, Craig.
This one looks really bad.
I don't know if I like the tone there, Kyle.
No, it is. It I mean, even after the touchdown pass, he threw a touchdown pass to Alan Lazard, and when he was coming off the field because he got hit at the end of the pass, he was coming off kind of gingerly as well. I mean, and we all know, I mean, even me in my mid-30s, I'm still not a spring chicken like I was 10 years ago, and even though Aaron Rodgers is an elite athlete, these hits and getting up, it takes a little bit longer. He does not look as spry as he used to. And I mean, he's 40. He's coming off an Achilles injury. Things just seem to probably hurt a little bit more than what they used to.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, totally fair. But, I mean, obviously it's what puts it at a premium of limiting the hits you take and how you take them. And that one was an unavoidable one that that was not good. This, by the way, it is a roughing the punter. And Aaron Rodgers is coming right
here
back
comes,
in.
Baby.
What do you
say,
Father Time now, Kyle Wallace?
He's still, look at him. He's trying. He's hurt.
Dude,
he's
he is not missing a play. So Aaron Rodgers helped off the field on third down. Then the Jets punted away on fourth down. They roughed the punter. Aaron Rodgers is not missing a snap. He was actually walking into the blue tent to get medical attention.
He
was one step from the blue tent, and he turned around the second this play happened, and Aaron Rodgers giving Brett Favre feels to all the Packers fans when they think back to moments like that. And it wasn't a concussion, so it's not like he's avoiding concussion protocol,
right.
But he avoids the blue medical tent to come in and hand the ball off on their first play, which then goes for a nice first down gain. So how about that for Jason, bringing you back to some of your Aaron Rodgers memories?
Yeah, he is. I will say this. He is tough. There's no doubt about it. He doesn't measure up to Favre just because of Favre's Iron Man streak. But that dude played through a lot of injuries, too. Last time he was in London, he broke his thumb at the end of that game. I know you and Tausch were there against the Giants, and he just, like Favre before him, steadfastly refused to come out of the lineup and kept playing through a fucking thumb.
One of the things that, you know, kind of made that last season not as good, right? That he was so stubborn and kind of played through it. And I don't think we ever knew how badly he was injured out in London and how they lost that terrible game of the Giants and then back home against the Jets that followed. So, Jason, last night the Miami Hurricanes pulled out a win over Cal that felt a lot like the Packers game could have felt against the Vikings last week. I mean, you being there, were there moments where you felt like, I don't know, Jordan Love versus the Saints vibes, like where it's like, hey, they got down big, but it was so early and there's plenty of time and the crowd's rocking, like the Packers are going to win this game?
After LaFleur blew his stack at the officials for not honoring his timeout call, and then after the 15-yard penalty with Love hitting Reed and then Reed doing everything to get the crowd back into it at 28-7, I thought, okay, now they're going to go into the second half. They were getting the ball to start the second half. They ended up punting. But what I thought was interesting was that fourth quarter, they were within a score with like 10 and a half minutes still left in the game. And I thought, okay, now they're in exactly where they want to be. The Vikings, you know, when you have you can build a big lead, but when it evaporates, you're the ones that are reeling. And so I thought maybe that the Vikings were in trouble. And look, they had the ball in their hands with an opportunity to really make a statement. And Love, of the three interceptions he threw, that was the worst one, was the one that he has pressure in his face coming from Harrison Smith, who blindsided Rodgers on a similar blitz earlier in this game. And he instead of taking the sack, instead of finding a place to throw it away at least, he kind of throws a Brett Favre up for grabs under pressure ball, and it gets intercepted. And that was kind of their window of opportunity. I know they cut it to two on another Wicks touchdown later, but, man, they had every opportunity for that to be similar to the Hurricanes' comeback against the Golden Bears last night, for sure.
Yeah, talk to me about the criminally underrated.
Yeah, I'll say this. And
for those of you, the Romeo Doubs, Tausch, Stan, I'm a Romeo Doubs stan, and Jason agreeing that he's criminally underrated. So just take us through what's gone wrong and what's happening, because it seems like he's the Jair Alexander of this year.
He's gotten the same suspension. He did not appoint himself captain, but Tausch was giving me a hard time because I had said last year, or 2 years ago now, I guess it was, as a rookie, that Romeo Doubs was the most even-keeled guy. Like, he just showed no emotion at all, like, at least with us. Like, his tone didn't even change when he would talk. and as I told those guys yesterday when we were in our text chain, like maybe even keeled was a euphemism because he's a different guy. I don't want to use, you know, pejorative terms like weird or strange because I don't pretend to know him very well. I don't think anybody that covers the team can say they know him. But, you know, he is definitely different. And so when this happened, I was not completely floored, but what does the logic of it makes zero sense to me. I mean, I don't get it at all. So we're four games into the season. He has played more snaps than any wide receiver on the roster. He has been targeted 20 times compared to Reed and Wicks, who have been targeted 22 times each.
So he's right there. I mean, he's right there. Yeah.
Right. And Wicks, 22 targets, but 13 of them were in the last game alone, right? They played two games with Malik Willis at quarterback, in which, by the way, Romeo Doubs was their leading receiver in the Colts game and had two really big plays for them, including one down the field ball that was a fantastic play. But they threw 33 passes in the two games that Willis started. I mean, Jordan Love threw 54 passes last Sunday alone. Like, so if two of your games were spent with your backup quarterback throwing an average of 16.5 passes in the two games, no one's getting targets, right? And then finally, and look, I'm not sure what his thought process was. I'm not sure who he talked to, if anyone, before he did this. But it's the week that he's going back to Los Angeles, his hometown. I saw Channel 58 Milwaukee did a really good piece on his high school teachers and teammates being excited for him to come back. So that's another layer to this. But to me, the biggest thing that doesn't make sense is look at what Devontae Adams did. Devontae's obviously unhappy in Las Vegas. Now he is far more accomplished than Romeo Doubs. But what did he do? Oh, my hamstring. Oh, my hamstring. I can't go. I'm not suggesting that faking an injury is better than what Romeo Doubs did, but what Romeo Doubs did put him completely in the jackpot on getting suspended.
So, but like, what did he do? What did he do? So did he just not show up and not tell them? Did he let people know? Like what actually happened?
He did not show up at Lambeau on Thursday, to the point that the team was, and this is Bill Huber, did an excellent job getting this scoop. I would love to know his source on this because I can guarantee you the Packers did not want that out there. They were, I'm sure, hoping to suspend him on a Saturday and have none of us know why. And so he did not show up on Thursday to the point that the team, and did not communicate anything, to the point that the team was worried and did a wellness check on him. Like, the staffers went to his home to see if he was okay, and he was there. He was okay. He was just apparently disgruntled. Then he didn't show up again on Friday, and that was when, you know, remember, LaFleur said on Thursday after practice that it was a personal matter, did not give any more details. We asked him, well, is he going to be here tomorrow? And his answer was, well, I would hope so, which was an interesting answer. And then what do you think about him for Saturday, for Sunday? And his quote was, well, we'll see. We're taking it day by day. You knew there was something amiss, but not to the degree of him no-showing and not coming. And then he didn't come on Friday either. And that obviously, once he did that, set the wheels in motion for the suspension. I just don't understand what he's, A, thinking, but B, what his technique for demonstrating his dissatisfaction accomplished. Like, he scrubbed all his social media of any references to the Packers. Like, he's a different guy, and I don't understand him, and I really don't understand him now.
Right, and I guess we don't know necessarily what could be going on outside of football.
No doubt. So. No doubt. But here's the thing. Like, and look, I have not that long ago, had a friend who had a pretty serious mental health crisis, and you worry, obviously, about that type of stuff. The fact that they went and did a wellness check on him and that he was fine, he just was unhappy, makes me wonder if what it is that caused him to go down this road. So I do not want to speak without any sort of sympathy for potential mental health challenges that he might be dealing with. But the bottom line is that from what others have said and what Bill Huber reported, it is just him being unhappy with his role on this team. And I'm struggling to understand how unhappy he could possibly be four games into the season with Jordan Love having missed two of those four games.
Truly a bizarre situation. By the way, just to update everyone, Aaron Rodgers drives the Jets all the way down the field. Garrett Wilson drops a pass on second down. He throws a beautiful back shoulder to Alan Lazard in the end zone, who drops the touchdown on third down. Jets kick a field goal. They trail the Vikings 17-10, 50 seconds to go, third quarter. That should be an interesting one from London. We'll talk about the Packers' interesting one with the Rams as Jason Wilde continues. Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
It's Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com. Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com.
Continue with Jason Wilde. So, Jason, I feel like no preseason real meaningful play means that September's the new preseason. We're supposed to know if teams are good by October. So, are the Packers good and are they on schedule given... obviously, the Jordan Love injury threw them off schedule, but given where they finished last year, do they feel generally on schedule for where they're supposed to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think the point you just made is the right one, that, you know, the season is longer. I know it's only one game, but one more game, one more playoff berth, there's just more margin for error. So whether that margin for error is not playing well early in the season or, say, losing your quarterback for two games, even though remarkably the fill-in was able to win two games.
Remarkably, there's the only two games they've won.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I don't think defensively they're anywhere near what they think they can be. You know, I think this game today is a colossal opportunity for them. The Rams offensive line is nicked up. They don't have Puka Nacua. They don't have Cooper Kupp. Like, this is the kind of game that, and I want to keep quoting Homer, because Homer was the one who said this, that this if you are who you think you are, this is the kind of game you win. And so this is the kind of game that they have to win, because that's if they're as good as they think they're capable of being, this is the first step toward being that team.
I've been at the last two Rams games. I'm not pulling off three in a row. But, I mean, they had no right beating the Niners and did. And then they pretty much dominated the Bears and had a bad turnover and had settled for field goals. But at the end of the day, like, even with this offensive line and no receivers, like, Kyren Williams has still been pretty effective, you know, running the ball. And I think that is what I'm interested to see today is, can the Packers actually stop Kyren Williams?
Yeah, he's legit, right? I mean, he's a physical runner. He's been impressive so far. The problem is that I don't think their passing game and I don't think their offensive line is very helpful to him.
Oh, no, they're not at all, but he's still running the ball reasonably well.
Yeah, but that makes them largely one-dimensional. And look, I am probably more supportive or more positive about Matthew Stafford than others are, but Matthew Stafford with the offensive line that he's currently behind is, dare I say, something of a sitting duck. And it would seem that the way the Packers pass rush has been so inconsistent, that this is the kind of game. You know, I thought it was interesting that Jeff Hafley chose to make kind of a bold prediction about how well he thinks Rashawn Gary is going to play today when we talked to him on Thursday. And you don't make those type of predictions solely based on, oh, I want to, you know, say something really positive publicly for my guy who's kind of taken some slings and arrows here. I think he probably said that because he's looking at this matchup going, all right, we can do to these guys what we did to the Tennessee Titans a couple weeks ago.
How about my great bold predictions from the kickoff of your season, including that Narvison would not miss a kick for the first 10 weeks? That one didn't work out
very
well.
Yeah, you nailed that one.
Yeah.
You were about as accurate as he's been.
Yeah, yeah. I did have I'd read double-digit touchdowns and the Packers having 50% more takeaways than they did last year, which they are on pace to shatter that mark based on the takeaways. But what is going on with the kicker?
So it's interesting. I am not – there was a time where I was a decent golfer. Then I didn't play golf for about 20 years. I think the last time I played golf on a real course with real grown-ups was for Tausch's Trifecta Foundation thing, and you were there, and I played with like Will Whitaker.
Yeah, I was in that foursome. That was not, or it may have been a fivesome, but it was your play did not. I believe you and Will Whitaker were tracking lost balls.
We were, yes, good memory, yes, indeed. So that is not my area, but golfers who know more about golf than I do at this point talk about how you always want a one way. If you're struggling, you want it to be a one way miss, because if you're spraying it all over the course, then you don't know what to fix, right? And in Braden Narvison's case, fascinatingly, he has a one-way miss. He has missed five kicks, including the one that was wiped out in Tennessee by penalty. All five have been to the right. And when they broke down the film, and frankly, when long snapper Matt Orzech looked behind him, upside down, between his legs, he noticed this too, that his left plant foot is too wide and it's causing him to push the ball to the right. Now it hasn't been every kick, but it has been on enough that all of these misses have done the same thing. Now the question is, if you fix it, then this should be fine, but will you fix it sufficiently or will you continue to do this? Cause you keep doing this, as Braden Narvison admitted, he's not going to be employed here any longer because, as he said to us, other teams would have gotten rid of me by now. And the Packers haven't, but I don't. The problem is the other options out there aren't that appealing either. It's quite possible that the second best available kicker is Anders Carlson. And I don't think they're bringing him back.
Yeah. I mean, Narvison, the best thing he had going for him is that he wasn't there in camp, right? Like, I mean, if he was one of those other guys, like, it's like he's gotten more opportunities than each of them did. Well, today should be interesting. There's going to be a ton of Packers fans there. I mean, it's going to feel like a Packers home game, and you felt like Jordan Love got into a rhythm. So I think Homer's point's a good one, right? I mean, they should win this game given the state of the Rams and given this matchup right now. So I think we learn a lot about the Packers today.
Yeah, and especially Love, because like you said about a rhythm, you know, this is a guy who, you, as Matt LaFleur kept saying all week long, you don't want to throw 50 passes in a game. And he's right. It means that you're not playing the game you want to play. But the fact that he got to throw 54 passes and shake off some of the rust and get into something of a rhythm in that fourth quarter, I do think that carries over when you're coming back from an injury. So I think that will help him in his process today.
And that means you think the Packers do win today?
I do. I will be surprised if they can't beat a pretty beat up Rams team. And again, if they don't have Jair Alexander, if they don't have Carrington Valentine, who are both questionable, that was a problem, obviously, against the Vikings and those two studs that they have at wide receiver. It would be a problem today if Puka and Cooper Kupp were healthy, but they're not. I don't think that will hurt them if either of those guys is out.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers throws one away out of his end zone, so the Jets will punt down 7, 13 minutes to go. Jason Wilde, you can listen to him, Wilde and Tausch, 9 to noon, and follow him at Jason J. Wilde. Thanks, Jason.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
There he is. All right, what do we got, Kyle? We got the 7 at 11-11, or what do we got coming
up? We do have the 7-11 at the 7 out of 11 at 11-11.
Yeah. I'm guessing you're firing at
you
me.
You sure are guessing, and all right. I got something. I think I got something good here.
All right, Kyle just teased it. It's the 7 at 11. At 11-11, as we continue, it's Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
It's Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com.